We'll have a look at the story first in 2 Kings. And here's this Shunammite woman. And I was thinking, I wish I had brought a modern translation so that we could just read it as a story. I'm going to read it in NIV. I haven't looked at it in the other translations, but stories are good for us, aren't they? We enjoy them. We relate to the people that are there. Can I make another admission? I nearly brought a flannel graph. But I couldn't find the right story, so I didn't bring it. And perhaps we think flannel graph belongs to the children, but I've seen adults respond to them too. Just as things are visualised and put in front of us, so somehow something happens. So before we start talking about this woman and what she was like and what she did, let's read the story. It's quite a long story, but I'm going to read it all, because although I'm not going to speak specifically on every part of it, it is all part of the story. And it's 2 Kings chapter 4, verse 8. And our prophet that we're reading about is Elisha. One day, Elisha went to Shunem, and a well-to-do woman was there who urged him to stay for a meal. So whenever he came by, he stopped there to eat. She said to her husband, "I know this man who comes our way is a holy man of God. Let's make a small room on the roof and put in it a bed and a table, a chair and a lamp for him. Then he can stay there whenever he comes to us." One day when Elisha came, he went up to his room and lay down there, probably tired because he'd been walking a long time in the heat and the dust and the dirt. He said to his servant Gehazi, "Call the Shunammite." So he called her and she stood before him. And Elisha said to him, "Tell her, you have gone to all this trouble for us. What can be done for you? Can we speak on your behalf to the king or the commander of the army?" And she replied, "I have a home among my own people." "What can be done for her?" Elisha asked. Gehazi said, "She has no son and her husband is old." Then Elisha said, "Call her." So he called her and she stood in the doorway. "About this time next year," Elisha said, "you will hold a son in your arms." "No, my lord," she objected. "Don't mislead your servant, O man of God." But the woman became pregnant, and the next year about that same time she gave birth to a son, just as Elisha had told her. The child grew, and one day he went out to his father, who was with the reapers. My head," he said to his father. His father told a servant, "Carry him to his mother." After the servant had lifted him up and carried him to his mother, the boy sat on her lap until noon, and then he died. She went up and laid him on the bed of the man of God, then shut the door and went out. She called her husband and said, "Please send me one of the servants and a donkey so that I can go to the man of God quickly and return." "Why go to him today?" he asked. "It's not the new moon or the Sabbath." "It's all right," she said. She saddled the donkey and said to her servant, "Lead on. Don't slow down for me unless I tell you." So she set out and came to the man of God at Mount Carmel. When he saw her in the distance, the man of God said to his servant Gehazi, "Look, there's the Shunammite. Run to meet her and ask her, 'Are you all right? Is your husband all right? Is your child all right?'" "Everything is all right," she said. When she reached the man of God at the mountain, she took hold of his feet. Gehazi came over to push her away, but the man of God said, "Leave her alone. She is in bitter distress, but the Lord has hid it from me and has not told me why." Did I ask you for a son, my lord?" she said. "Didn't I tell you, don't raise my hopes?" Elisha said to Gehazi, "Tuck your cloak into your belt, take my staff in your hand and run. If you meet anyone, do not greet him, and if anyone greets you, do not answer. Lay my staff on the boy's face." But the child's mother said, "As surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you." So he got up and followed her. Gehazi went on ahead and laid the staff on the boy's face, but there was no sound or response. So Gehazi went back to meet Elisha and told him, "The boy has not awakened." When Elisha reached the house, there was the boy lying dead on his couch. He went in, shut the door on the two of them, and prayed to the Lord. Then he got on the bed and lay upon the boy, mouth to mouth, eyes to eyes, hand to hands. As he stretched himself out upon him, the boy's body grew warm. Elisha turned away and walked back and forth in the room, and then got on the bed and stretched out upon him once more. The boy sneezed 7 times and opened his eyes. Elisha summoned Gehazi and said, "Call the Shunammite," and he did. When she came, he said, "Take your son." She came in, fell at his feet, and bowed to the ground. Then she took her son and went out. And we meet the same woman again over in the beginning of chapter 8. This is some time later, and it would look as though the woman's older husband had died, because he doesn't feature in this story at all. Now Elisha had said to the woman whose son he had restored to life, "Go away with your family and stay for a while wherever you can, because the Lord has decreed a famine in the land that will last 7 years. The woman proceeded to do as the man of God said. She and her family went away and stayed in the land of the Philistines 7 years. At the end of the 7 years, she came back from the land of the Philistines and went to the king to beg for her house and land. The king was talking to Gehazi, the servant of the man of God, and had said, "Tell me about the great things Elisha has done." Just as Gehazi was telling the king how Elisha had restored the dead to life, the woman whose son Elisha brought back to life came to beg the king for her house and land. Gehazi said, "This is the woman, my lord and king, and this is her son whom Elisha restored to life." The king asked the woman about it, and she told him. Then he assigned an official to her case and said to him, "Give back everything that belonged to her, including all the income from her land, from the day she left the country until now." Let's go back. If we had enough time, I would say, take a piece of paper and a pencil and write down all the things that you can learn about this woman from this story. We don't have time, so I'm going to share some of them that I found with you. But it's not all of them. You know, one person looks at something and we get part of it, and someone else looks at it and gets another part, and together we build up a bigger picture. So you'll no doubt think of lots of things that I blithely miss. But let's see what we can learn from her this morning. As I said earlier, we don't even know her name. We do know that she was married to a man who was much older than she was. She had no son, which of course was a tremendous disappointment. The greatest desire of any girl was to marry and to have children. Until you had children, you really hadn't reached the goal that you really longed for. I found this in the girls in the Solomon Islands too. For most of them, the thing that they wanted was to be married and to have their own children. particularly boys. And this woman was married to this older man and had suffered this bitter disappointment and in many cases greatest shame, perhaps not the greatest, but a great shame for a woman in that she had no children, particularly no son. However, it looks as though she didn't let this get her down, make her bitter. She was wealthy. They lived in this town of Shunem, which was on the road that Elisha travelled regularly. We really don't know much of what the prophets like Elijah and Elisha did, except that we know they travelled from town to town. And of course, as they travelled from town to town, they needed hospitality. And such was the culture of these people that they were always offered hospitality. And it was this woman who recognised Elisha as the Son of Man and as a man of God and invited him to have a meal with them. She had an open home and she had eyes to see and she had the willingness to share what she had with others. And so she invited this man of God home for a meal. And whenever he came past, and we have no idea how often it was, he came and had a meal with them. And as time went on, she began to do some thinking, some creative thinking. And she went the appropriate way about doing something about her creative thinking. In that society, a woman who did things on her own was really judged as moving quite out of place. And she had this idea and she shared it with her husband, and of course she needed her husband's help in it too. I see that this man who comes past from time to time and that we give meals to really is a man of God. She'd watched, she'd listened, she'd let the Lord speak to her, and she recognised Elisha for what he was. And she said, can we build a room for him? Flat roofed houses, let's put a little room on top, so that when he comes he'll have somewhere where he can rest quietly, where he can be at home, and we can offer him more than just a meal. So they built the room and they furnished it with a bed to sleep on, a table to put things on, a chair to sit on, and a light so that he could see what he was doing at night. And so they built this little room to provide comfort for this man of God, comfort and rest and hospitality. Many of us, I'd say all of us probably, are very ordinary women. Some of you are married with your own homes, some of us are not. But we all have things that we can share with others. And one of the great marks of Christians through the years has been the willingness to open their homes to hospitality. And it is something which our society has lost to its very great detriment. There are people who believe that to have people at home, the silver has to be polished, the floor has to be antiseptically clean, the cushions and the chairs have to be newly covered, and everything has to be beautiful. Can I tell you something I discovered as a missionary coming home on furlough? That the people who really opened their homes and opened their hearts were the ones who often had threadbare floor coverings, very ordinary meals, the little old widows, not always, but those who had a hunger to share the things of God and who had not allowed the riches of this world to make them forget to open their homes and open their hearts to God and to God's people. And in so doing, they missed some of the richest blessings, not from me, I'm speaking generally here, the richest blessings that God has for us as we have opportunity to sit and share together. This woman didn't miss out on this, and I hope we're not. Because it's when we can offer hospitality and we can sit with those who have walked with God that so many little gems come to light. And being on the giving end, as well as the receiving end, but being on the giving end from time to time, I thank God for the blessings that have come my way as I have offered hospitality to God's people. If you've tried it, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't tried it, perhaps it's something that the Lord would have you think about and pray about. Notice though, she didn't just do it herself. That home belonged to her and to her husband, and he was in it too, although she was the originator of the thinking. Elisha was very grateful for this woman for what this woman did for him. And he wanted to repay her in some way. And he asked if he could commend her to the king or to someone for some notice to be taken. And she said, "No, my lord, I'm quite happy, I'm quite satisfied where I am. I have a home here with my own people. I don't need anything. I've ministered to you. I don't need anything in reply." But Elisha didn't leave it there. Elisha promised her that in a year's time she would be holding a son. We don't know how old she was. We don't know how long she'd been married. We do know she had an older husband. And it sounds as though she had given up the idea of ever having any children. Because when Elisha told her she would have a son, she said, "Don't mislead your servant, O man of God. Don't tempt me with hopes that I know can't come true. That's something I've worked through and I've come to learn to live with it. Don't bring it all back up to the surface again." But it all did come true. Somehow or other, in spite of all of her previous history and the impossibility of it happening, she trusted what the prophet said, and we see this on more than one occasion, and a year later her son was born and the dream that she had put away and put behind her came true. And she held her son in her arms. I'll guarantee there was some real rejoicing in that home. Real rejoicing. As a result of the fact that she listened and she saw the Lord work in her life. But then the next bit is one of those things that makes you say, why? Her husband had fields and it was the summertime because they were out harvesting the crop. And this young lad, we don't know how old he was, but he was old enough to go out with the reapers into the fields where they were harvesting their crop. He was out there with the men and the women, no doubt, who also worked there, and he complained of his head. Was it too much sun? Was it a fever? We don't know, but whatever it was, he became ill. His father recognised him as being ill and sent the little boy back to his mother, back to the cool quietness of the house with a servant. She nursed him. Many people look at us in sheer horror and disbelief when they see us put a sick child to bed, because a young child who is sick needs the comfort of being nursed. And the household and other responsibilities are put aside to nurse the sick child. This is what she did. She nursed this sick lad. We don't know how long for, but about midday he died. That is devastating. It's an experience that I suspect few of us have had. So shortly after I went to the islands, I knew a woman who had this kind of an experience. I was teaching in a girls' boarding school, and we had an island woman and her husband, who had died quite recently, on the staff. I remember one morning at morning break at school, at about 10 o'clock in the morning, two toddlers were playing together. One was this island woman's son and one was a missionary's daughter. Two and a half years old, perhaps three. 6 o'clock that night, that little boy was dead. He had gone down with what was presumably cerebral malaria. His mother nursed him through the day as he convulsed, and he died. That's what this woman went through. And it was the son that had been given to her at the word of the prophet. Well, if you're going to take the boy away, why did you give him to me? Can't you hear the questions? Why, Lord, why? But even in the middle of what must have been those questions, she still trusted the prophet and his word and his power and the fact that he was a man of God. What did she do? She didn't go to pieces. She immediately sent to her husband and said, "Give me a servant and give me a donkey. I want to go to the man of God." See, even in this extremity, she knew what it was to be kept, so that she was thinking logically and wisely and sensibly. Let me have a donkey and let me have a servant so that I can go to Elisha. Now, where was Elisha? Elisha was at Mount Carmel up there. She was at Shunem down here. And from what I can work out on the map, it was about 40 miles. What's that, about 60 kilometres? How long does that take to go on a donkey? I've never tried it. It would be quite a few hours, 60 k's on a donkey, because donkeys are not horses. And this woman set out, without saying anything to anyone, set out to go to the man of God with her problem. She came, she wouldn't accept what the servant said. I would only go to Elisha. If we have a look at verse 26, Elisha had seen her coming and he said to his servant, "Run to meet her and ask her, 'Are you all right? Is your husband all right? Is your child all right?'" What did she say? "Everything's fine." He wasn't the right man to share the problem with. She came to Elisha. Did I ask you for a son, my lord? Didn't I tell you, don't raise my hopes?" She poured it out at the right place for her to come to the prophet of God. Where do we go when things fall to pieces? Many times we do need an earthly human ear. But it needs to be the right one. And it needs to be, above all, to the Lord. But there are times when the right godly person can support us when we come to big issues in life. But notice that she didn't share it with the servant, she didn't share it with her husband, she didn't share it with anyone. She kept it and shared it with the right person. But then she didn't behave as though she had gone to pieces and her world was crumbling either. She was able to let the Lord keep her in it, to share it appropriately, and then to find the answer. She'd ministered to the man of God, She had trusted the man of God, and she acknowledged what the man of God had done. We come to the end of that chapter, and we see Elisha had gone back to Shunem with her. He had seen that boy return to life, and he had handed the boy back to his mother. Can you imagine what a thrill that was? Thrill for him, thrill for her. Here's the little boy, alive again, being given back to his master. Verse 37, she came in, fell at his feet, and bowed to the ground. She took her son and went out. Wasn't she thankful? Yes, she was. And she showed her thanks in the way that was appropriate. She was circumspect. She showed respect to the man of God. And at the same time, she was saying thank you to him and to God for the return of that very precious little boy. Do we have grateful hearts? How many of us remember to come back and say thank you to God for the prayers that we ask? So often we pray and we forget about the prayer. Sometimes we even forget that we prayed for something when we see the answer. Sometimes we just take it for granted. But we do need to learn to be thankful. Now there's a whole lot more in that story, but they're the three points that, as I worked through that chapter, hung together. Here was this woman, a married woman in a home, who was prepared to minister to the prophet in an appropriate way and in a creative way. She recognised him and she ministered to him, and then in that time of deepest trouble, she trusted the man of God. It appeared as though everything was contradictory, but she didn't move in her faith. And when she saw that little boy return to life, she acknowledged the fact that he had been given back to her in an appropriate and in a circumspect manner. Now, time went by. Apparently the husband died. And we move over to chapter 8. And we have this woman, now a widow, with a boy, of course, who is considerably older. And in that land, a famine was coming. Famine is usually the result of drought or of pestilence destroying crops. We had a drought here shortly after I came back from the Solomons. And it was terrible out west. I drove through to South Australia to my home with friends at the end of 1982. And I have never seen anything like it. We drove through Hay, Balranald, through that way. There were men droving sheep on the road. And they looked as though they couldn't stand up. There were sheep in paddocks, and they looked as though they were eating dirt. They were the colour of dirt, and they were skin bone nothing. On the coast, we were living fairly free of that, except that meat prices had soared. And difficult as though that drought was, and I'm not trying to make that light, here in our society, even droughts to that extent don't bite like they would bite back here. That was a drought for how long? 1 year? Perhaps 2 years. We had a drought last year, didn't we, up in the Hunter area? Imagine if that had gone on for 7 years. Because that's how long this drought was. 7 years. And they didn't have the cushion of credit. In our society, to a degree, when drought hit those farmers, they were able to go to the stores and they were able to get credit. Some of them were foreclosed, yes, and I'm not denying all of that, but there was a way in which for many, at least for a reasonably long period of time, even those whose crops and stock were affected were cushioned from the worst results of drought. If we were in, say, Africa, or in many other parts of the world, which are the same as this was, there was no store and there was no credit. Your crops didn't grow, you tightened your belt. Your stock died, you tightened your belt. Water to drink? You drank it sparingly because there was no more to get from anywhere. And this man of God spoke to this widow now, and widows and fatherless were the ones who suffered first. Even though she was a rich woman, she would suffer first. And the man of God said to her, "There's a famine coming. Go away for a period of time," just as Naomi and Elimelech had done with their two sons. Go away to a land where there is no drought, there is no famine, and then when news filters through to you that the famine has finished, you can come back. And so this woman, who had learned to trust the man of God through these previous experiences, now obeyed him. Probably one of the most difficult things she had ever done, to pack up and to go with her son to live among strangers, pagan people who spoke a different language, but to live there virtually as a refugee for the time of the drought. But she obeyed because she knew this man of God knew what he was talking about. It no doubt saved their lives by going away. However, the drought finished and she came back to the land. She didn't have a kinsman redeemer. This is some hundreds of years after Ruth. And kinsman redeemer were there, but not in the same way. Now, what happens to your land when you're away for 7 years? It had been used. She had to get it back. If she was going to survive now she was home, she had to get that land back. But someone else had it in their possession. Ruth, through Naomi's guidance, went to her kinsman redeemer Boaz. This woman did what was the custom in her time, and she came in chapter 8 verse 3 to ask the king for the return of her land and her house, now that she was back in her homeland. Now, it just happened. I love that word that Margaret used yesterday, happenstance. It just happened that as this woman arrived to ask the king about getting her land and her house back, Gehazi, Elisha's servant, was talking to the king. The king was very interested in this odd man, Elisha. Prophets of God are always odd men. And this king, no doubt, couldn't really quite understand what made him tick. So this king was talking to Gehazi and asking him what Elisha had done. So, of course, in the process of telling the story, Gehazi comes to the point of Elisha raising the son of this woman to life. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. How on earth can the king understand that Elisha really did bring a boy back to life? I mean, that's really going a bit too far, isn't it? But happenstance, here comes the woman herself.
Would you please turn the tape over at this point?
Here comes the woman herself, seeking entry to the king for the return of her house and land. Ah, says Gehazi, here she is. This is the woman whose son I've been telling you about. So the king asked the woman about it firsthand. She asked the woman about it. She told him about it, and her son was with her. She could say, this and this and this and this, and here he is. The king couldn't disbelieve that. Here was the testimony of a woman who had been through it. And here was the result in front of him. And as a result of that, the king trusted what she said and promptly appointed the right official to look into it all and to return to her what was rightfully hers. Don't know how she'd have gone on if that happenstance hadn't happened, but it did happen, and we can see God's hand in that too. She came before the king, and her word was trusted because of what Gehazi had said. And because of her word was trusted, the right action was taken on the part of the king. High places were affected, weren't they? Here's a testimony to the king of what the man of God did through the power of God. Where did it start? A woman opening her home to a man of God for a meal. Not very big. Just one of the ordinary, everyday things that could happen. The man of God comes by, needs a meal, come home, and the whole of that story flowed out of that first occasion when she opened her home to a man of God. And maybe our stories won't be the same. In fact, they won't be the same, will they? They'll all be different. But by taking the step that we can, that's right there in front of us, you may not be able to open your home for one reason or another, but there's something you can do that just happens to come across the kind of life you are living where you are. May I challenge you to think and to pray creatively and to not despise small things. I've heard so many women say, oh, but I can't do anything. We can all do something, and the Lord doesn't expect us to do more than we can do. And what we can do is give him ourselves, what we have and where we are, to use creatively for him. It may be quite different from anyone else, but that doesn't matter if it is something which God has given you to do for him in your daily round of life as you acknowledge and as you serve God. That to me is the biggest thing that this woman shows us. She didn't have to go and look for something. By using her eyes, listening to the Lord, it was right there in front of her. And it led her on and out, that is true, but that's where it started.